We're doing Parshat Vayeshev. We'll do a quick overview of the Parsha, and then we'll learn it with more depth. Our Parsha begins with Yaakov raising his children, two orphans. Yosef is 17 years old. His little brother Binyamin is 7-8 years old. And Yaakov settles down in Israel. And there's enmity brewing between Yosef and the other brothers. Yosef keeps telling his dad what the brothers are doing wrong. Yosef is extraordinarily wise, and he is the one who can absorb all of his father's teachings. And Yosef can also instruct the brothers as to how to watch the sheep better. And Yaakov has a special relationship with Yosef, so he makes him a special coat, and the brothers are jealous of him. And Yosef has a dream. He tells him, listen, I have a dream that we're all making these bundles, and then my bundle stood up, and your bundles all surrounded it and bowed to my bundle. And his brothers say, that's what you're dreaming about, you're going to be king over us. And they hate him even more. And then he has another dream, and he says, I dreamt the sun and the moon, 11 stars are all bowing to me. And his father sees how the brothers are getting annoyed at him, so his father yells at him. And he says, what are you dreaming those types of dreams for? You think your mother and I are coming to bow to you? And everyone's jealous of him. And his father is very impressed. Wow, the kid senses that Mashiach is still coming from him, Mashiach ben Yosef. So the brothers go out to graze the sheep in Shechem. Shechem is a dangerous place for the Jewish people. And Yaakov calls on Yosef. He says, I want a favor. Shechem's dangerous. It's dangerous for 10 brothers. It's even more dangerous for you. But can you do me a favor? I want you to go see how they're doing. And let me know. So Yosef goes. Yaakov accompanies him part of the way. And an angel meets him and asks him, what are you seeking? And he says, my brothers, can you tell me where they're grazing? And he says, no, they've left this idea of brothership. He says, I've heard them going out and thinking religious ways of how to take you down. Yosef says, okay, but I know they're not so happy with me. My father told me to go, I'm going. And he goes. They see him from a distance. They have wild dogs. They sick the wild dogs at him. Nothing happens. Shimon and Levi say to one another, let's shoot him. Shimon pulls the bow. He's ready to shoot Yosef. They say, wait, let's let him come here. The dreamer will deal with him. Yosef shows up. Reuven tells them, you're going to kill him? Don't do that. They said, why? We'll throw him in a pit. And we'll say he got eaten by a wild animal. Let's see what happens with his dreams. He's thinking of bumping us all out of the Jewish people. He thinks he will be the continuation. And maybe Dad will buy into his idea. And then we won't be the continuation. We are entitled to be the continuation. He's making us seem so bad in our father's eyes that he might get his way. Reuven says, you can't kill him. It's wrong. Put him in the pit. But don't you kill him. Don't kill him with your own hands. And Reuven's plan is to take him out during the night and bring him back home. So when Yosef gets there, the Torah spares us the gory details. In next week's Parsha, the Torah will share with us what really happened. In this week's Parsha, the Torah doesn't tell us. It just tells us they took off his clothing and threw him in the pit. Next week's Parsha, the Torah says, the brothers, 20 years later, are reviewing what happened, and they say to one another, he begged us, he cried, and we saw him suffering, and we didn't listen. So there's this cruel encounter. The brothers, in the name of justice, are confident that what they're doing is right, and on a certain level, they were right. As cruel as it sounds, we will see. And so Yosef says, please don't do this to me. And they're not listening. And they take off that beautiful coat his father gave him. And they throw him into the pit. And inside the pit, there's this deep pit. And on the bottom, he's on the bottom. And suddenly he sees all around him snakes and scorpions. And they're slithering all around him. And he's scared out of his wits. And he begs them, take me out of here. Don't do this to me. And they're not listening. And on the contrary, they walk away from the pit. And they sit down to eat. And then they see a caravan of Yishmaelim heading to Mitzrayim. And Yehuda tells the brothers, we don't make any money by killing him. Why don't we benefit something out of it? Let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. He is our brother, our own flesh. We shouldn't be the ones to cause his death. And so Yosef is taken out of the pit and sold to the Yishmaelim for 20 silver coins. Our sages say, based on the Haftarah, that each brother got a pair of shoes. Reuven was not present at this time. He was hiding in the mountains. He said, I have to go daven. Really, he's focused on his tshuva, and he's waiting for nightfall to set so that he could come and pull Yosef out. So the Yishmaelim take Yosef down to Egypt. That night, Reuven comes down to the pit, and he calls down into the pit, Yosef, Yosef. He throws down a rope. Yosef's not there. He climbs in. Yosef's not there. He climbs out. He tears his clothing. He runs over and he says, the kid's gone. Kid, he's 17 years old. He's not such a kid. But now he feels like he's his kid. He's his little brother. How am I coming home to dad? So they tell him, no, don't worry, he's not dead. We just sold him down to Mitzrayim. It's fine. They take the beautiful garment Yosef had and they slaughter a goat and they dip it in blood. And Yehuda brings it to his father and he says those pitiful words. He says, this is what we found. Hakerna, can you please recognize it? Is it your son's garment or not? Yehuda says those terrible words. And Yaakov hears how the brothers talk about Yosef. Not our brother, your kid. Not, oh no, look what happened, but can you identify this? And so Yaakov says, it is my son's garment. An evil animal consumed him. Maybe the animal called Yehuda. Maybe the animal called Reuven. Maybe the animal called Shimon. Maybe his brothers tied him to a tree and walked away and let an animal devour him. But yes, an evil animal consumed Yosef, and he tears his clothing and he wears sack and he starts mourning, and he will mourn for 20 years. And even though his sons and daughters and daughters-in-law, everyone tries to comfort him, he says, no, I will die in my mourning. And with that, we pause our story. Yosef is sold in Mitzrayim. And we will revisit Yosef in a minute. First, the Torah tells us what happens with Yehuda. No questions yet. So Yehuda is demoted. The brothers say, you told us to sell him. If you would have told him to, if you would have told us to bring him back home, we would have listened. It's all your fault. And so Yehuda is demoted. And one of the great things we learn about Yehuda is that even when he's down, he's up. And that's the hallmark of a leader. That at his hardest moments, and when he feels he is the biggest failure, that is when he turns life into a success. The hallmark of Yehuda and David and their descendants is that specifically at the moment when they realize they've done something wrong, and it seems like all is lost, it's at that moment that they hold on to their values and their self-worth and their responsibility to make life worth something. And so Yehuda goes into business, marries a woman, has a child, another child, a third child, Eronan Sheila. And then he takes the most pious girl he could find, Tamar, and he marries her off to Er. Er sees she's beautiful, he doesn't want her to lose her beauty, and so that's why every time he's intimate at the very end, instead of impregnating her, he spills his seed to the ground. And so he dies, even though he's a young kid, he's not even bar mitzvah yet. But he was a very intelligent man, and so he gets the death penalty at the hands of heaven. Yehuda tells his second son, Onan, who is also 6-7 years old, do Yibam, marry your brother's widow. So Onan does, and he says, but what, you know, if I have a kid, then the kid will actually be the soul of my brother coming back. Now, so he also spills his seed. Every time at the end of intimacy, he spills his seed outside, and so he dies as well. Yehuda says, something's wrong with this lady. These kids are dying when they marry her. So he tells her, you wait by your father's shame. You wait until my son Shelah grows up. He's too young for this. And so she goes back home. Yehuda loses his own wife. So now Yehuda lost three people. Chazal say, why did he lose two sons and a wife? Because he didn't save Yosef. The Torah puts this story here, even though the Torah's jumping forward, the Torah will have to go rewind to the story of Yosef. But the Torah puts the story here to tell us the price Yehuda's going to pay. Even though technically he saved Yosef's life, Chazal say from here we learn if a person starts a mitzvah and doesn't conclude it, so in Shemayim they take him to task over it. Yehuda started saving Yosef, but he did it, as the Talmud says, in the most vile way. When a brother speaks about a brother and says, we don't make a profit this way, and that's his excuse for saving his brother's life, let's make some money off of this. So that, Chazal say, was a terrible way to talk about saving Yosef's life. Every year the Kohen Gadol would slaughter a goat and bring its blood into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. And every year we try to atone for that baseless hatred that was at the root of what happened between the brothers and Yosef.
So in a way it was justified.
I did. In a way. Right. That's exactly the point. Sometimes there's justification for hating. And even so.
What was the way?
We're not yet up to that. We're still doing the quick overview. So Yehuda is headed to shear his sheep after he lost his wife. Tamar hears that Yehuda's traveling that way, and she realizes he's not letting her marry into the family. She knows she's done everything right. So what does Tamar do? She gets all dressed up, and she tries to seduce Yehuda. Yehuda doesn't recognize her, and she is successful, as we will discuss in our in-depth overview. And then after 3 months, Yehuda gets word she's pregnant. So Yehuda says she has to get the penalty for that. And she sends word to Yehuda, here are the signs of the man who impregnated me. Can you help identify who it is? And Yehuda gets the signs with the famous words that he used, Haker na. The same words he had used a decade and a half earlier to his father about his brother's garments, she sends him with the garment she held on of his and asks him, Haker no, could you please recognize this? And Yehuda says, it's me. She's right. And so Yehuda marries her, and they have twins, Peretz and Zarah. Yosef in Egypt is acquired by Paro's chief executioner, Potiphar, who's a eunuch. And he is very successful in Potiphar's house. And so Potiphar appoints him over everything. And Potiphar's wife falls in love with him. And she asks him to be intimate with her, and he refuses. She waits for a day that everyone's gone. She grabs him and says, today we're going to do it. And he says, no. And she says, I'm not letting go. And he tries to pull away, and she's holding on to his robe. So he slips out of the robe and runs outside naked. So now he's in trouble and she's in trouble. So what does she do? She waits till people are around. She starts yelling, save me, save me. They come in, what happened? And she says, look at what that vile Hebrew servant tried to do to me. Here I was yelling, and he tried to attack me. And so they bring it to court. And in court, two things happen. The Egyptian priests say, let's check the garment. And when they check Yosef's garment, they say, well, if he was trying to attack her, then he was pushing forward and she was pushing away. That means the front of the garment will be frayed. The front of his neck will be frayed because he was trying to make advances. But if his version of the story is true, that he was pulling away and she was pulling him forward, then his neck was pushing against the back of the garment. So let's just analyze the cloth and we'll see whose version is true. And they analyze the story and they come back to Potiphar and they say, we're sad to say, your wife's story doesn't hold water. The servant told the truth. And there's a kid who was in the room that couldn't talk until that day and suddenly opens his mouth and says, I was here. And Yosef's telling the truth. So Potiphar doesn't know what to do. He can't admit his wife is at fault. He can't punish Yosef. So he puts Yosef in the royal prison. This way he saves face and Yosef doesn't have to suffer too much. So Yosef's thrown into jail. And over there again, he's very nice and everyone likes him until they appoint him in charge of the prison. And the end of the parasha is the baker and the butler are thrown into prison. They both have dreams and Yosef interprets them that the baker will be executed in 3 days and the butler will be reinstated in 3 days on Paro's birthday, and his interpretation comes true. Yosef asks the butler, remember me, help me out of here because I have no way out unless you help me. And because he worded it that way, Hashem causes it that the butler is disinterested. Nothing good happens to Yosef from that for another 2 years. And that's the conclusion of our parsha. So now let's begin. You guys focused? Because there's so much to discuss. I want to go quickly. You ready? Should we make a few cups of coffee here before we start? Yes? Okay, who wants to make a few cups of coffee? I'll make a few cups. Starting our parasha of Yeshu Yaakov Be'el Tmigulei Aviv. There will be a recurring theme in our parasha. Why don't you try and see how many times you can see this theme come true? And that is the pasuk Rabot Machshavot Belevish. Man can have many plans. Va'atzat Hashem Hitakum. And it is Hashem's plan that will ultimately last. And if you pay attention to the parasha, that is a recurring theme over and over again. That people try to ensure that what they want should be the outcome, and Hashem turns the tables on them. So let's begin. Yaakov wants to settle in the land of Israel.
Isn't that contradicted? You have your choice of your way.
Okay, so I appreciate the question. We have two concepts. We have the concept that within a certain realm we have free will. And we have to exert our ability. We have to exercise our ability to define the outcome of things in our life. Yet we also have to recognize that there's an overall plan. As Rav Neventhal explains, that's the idea of shofarot on Rosh Hashanah. We have, first of all, Malchuyot. Hashem is king before creation. And then Hashem creates a world on Rosh Hashanah. And then we have Zichronot, where there's a mention of what did we do in this planet. We can make changes. We can make things happen or not happen. That's Zichronot. There's an accounting. What did you do this year? And then there's Shofarot, that recognition that I can do a certain amount, but at the end, the whole planet is headed in a certain direction. And there is a godly plan. And I have a realm of influence within a certain motion that the planet is taking. At the end of the day, Hashem is moving humanity in a certain direction. Now, I can play a role in that. I can try to get in the way. I can try to promote and make things happen sweeter, quicker. What role will I play in that general plan? If you could imagine that you have children have a track, a racetrack. Okay? You have a racetrack and the children have 8 cars running on the racetrack. But you can move that racetrack. You could take that whole racetrack out of the house and put it on the yard, right? So within that racetrack, you could ensure which car will win. But where the racetrack will be, the one who holds the racetrack will define where it will land, right? So we are the race cars on the track. And within the track, I can define where I am. But the whole track is going somewhere. Someone's carrying it. Yeah? So Hashem says there's a plan.
So it doesn't really matter what we do.
It does, because the question is, what will my role be in all of that wonderful plan? I could still be a winner. Where the racetrack ends.
That people get punished. Because it's still it's a plan.
There's an overall plan. It's not defined what my role will be. There's going to be an Esav, there's going to be a Yaakov. There's going to be a Haman, there's going to be a Mordechai. There are going to be the heroes of the story and the villains of the story. Which are you going to be?
What if they both decide to be good?
That's great. Then things will happen better. That's what I said. That we know where the end game is going. There's going to be Mashiach. There are going to be certain things that happen. There's going to be a Jewish people. But who will be a part of it? Who will be a part of moving that vision forward? The extreme example is a Ger. Is he coming on board or not? The train's going to get there. Is he going to be on that train? That's the extreme example. A less extreme example is the question of the average person. What role will I take in the movement? But there is a plan. It's not a free-for-all. And our parasha repeatedly shows us where that goes. And it's also important to know that there's a point where Hashem says it's not going to work. I'm not going to let you succeed. Bechira chofshit does not mean that anything, any thought that I entertain is doable. I spent years as a kid trying to fly. It annoyed me like crazy that I couldn't fly. I would flap my hands, I would run, I would experiment with all kinds of things trying to figure out how I could fly. And it didn't work. Didn't work. Ah, but you want to. Okay. Okay, so Yaakov has one son that's a replica of Yaakov. And that son will undergo a similar life to Yaakov's son, and that is Yosef. Yosef will spend 20 years in exile, etc. Yosef also looks like Yaakov. Yes, sir. Does not seem that way. So Yosef, even though he's the youngest of the siblings, is taking charge of the siblings. And when Reuven transgresses with Bila in last week's parsha, Yosef is the one that reports it to his father. And then Yosef gets the rights to be the firstborn. And Yosef is very clearly the firstborn son of that cherished wife, Rachel, who has passed away. And so everyone hates Yosef. Yosef is saying bad things about the brothers, and the brothers sense that Yosef has that fire within him that reminds them of Esav, and they're right. Yosef is the one that could take on Esav because he has that fire, but Yosef also has a certain fire within him. He will channel it for good. But what they sense in Yosef, the ability to speak badly about them behind their back, the ability to get the father to love him and not the brothers, or more than the brothers. So the brothers sense in Yosef a threat, and a threat to their whole future. Because what they're seeing is that when they're all sent out to watch the sheep, Yosef stays home to learn Torah with his father. So then what's the message? You're all going to be out in the field like Esav. And Yosef can stay home in the tent with me, learning the Torah. Who's the continuum of the family? Who got the Bechorah? If Yaakov took the Bechorah from Esav, then Yosef took the Bechorah from Reuven. And so the brothers sense that, as pious as they are, Yosef is threatening their ability to be a part of the Jewish family. And Yosef keeps telling the father what the brothers are doing wrong in his eyes. Sometimes he's right, and sometimes he's very wrong.
The brothers ever say Yaakov?
I don't know. You see, Yaakov sensed it. That's why Yaakov yells at Yosef, even though Yosef's in the right. So, yes, sir.
And it doesn't fall into Lashon Hara what Yosef did.
It's a good question. It certainly sounds like it was Lashon Hara what Yosef did. Yeah? Yosef had good intentions, but it did fall under that heading. And Yaakov loves Yosef more than all the other sons. And when he makes everyone a coat, he makes Yosef's coat with a little ribbon of color around the sleeve. So that's enough. When they look at his coat, it's different. He's unique. He's the leader. And so the brothers hate him. And Chazal say, Lo'olam al yeshaneh adam b'no b'n abanim. Never treat one son differently than the other sons. We are sensitive beyond what we imagine to preferential treatment. And Chazal say you have to always treat your children the same way. Now there are parents that even when their kids get married, if they visit one child, then they visit the other child. It doesn't matter where they live. They have to show them that treatment. If they invite one child, they invite the other child. Kids, even as they age, have this feeling. These weren't youngsters. Yosef was the youngest and he was 17. And yet they sensed he loves him more. Chazal say, don't treat your kids differently. Chazal say that our descent to Egypt and the baseless hatred that led to it was Yaakov's fault. Chazal didn't say the brothers shouldn't have felt that way. Chazal say Yaakov shouldn't have treated Yosef that way. And that's a remarkable lesson to us as parents. that even as children age, we have to be very careful. I was teaching once, I gave a test. The kids were in 8th grade, and I had learned, I had read books on how to manage a crowd of children. I used to perform, so one of the books on performing before children said that if you have a kid that's rowdy, so put your hand on his shoulder when you talk to him. And sometimes, as you're performing, if you just put your hand on the kid's shoulder, that touch will get the kid to calm down. You don't have to talk to him. You just give him that attention of putting your hand on his shoulder, and the kid will calm down. So I'm giving them a test, and the first kid raises his hand. He's got a question, and I see that the kid is becoming a nudnik and driving me crazy for no good reason. So I walk over, and as I'm looking at his test, I put a hand on his shoulder. And I look at his test, and the kid calms down. So inwardly, I smile. Next kid, same thing. Kid makes a balagan. He's asking questions. You know, I really don't understand this question, and I don't remember that you taught us that, and are you sure that it's fair to ask that? And so I walk over, put my hand on his shoulder, and the kid calms down. I answer his question. We continue with the test. 10 seconds later, a quiet, nice, sweet boy raises his hand. So I walk over to the kid, and he's calm, and everything's fine, and he didn't ask, you know. I felt this question was sincere, so I didn't put my hand on his shoulder. I'm looking at his test, and I'm trying to understand what's bothering him with the question, and suddenly I feel his small little hand taking my hand and putting it on his shoulder. The kid sensed, you did it for the others, why don't you do it for me? I'm not sure if it was conscious or subconscious, but he sensed, why? The other two kids, when you answered them, you put your hand on their shoulders. I don't get that same treatment. So it taught me a tremendous thing. Yaakov Avinu, Chazal say, treated Yosef a little bit different, but that's all it takes to get the brothers to be jealous. And so they hate him. They mamash hate Yosef. And they can't talk to him in peace. When you feel badly about someone, it doesn't matter what a tzaddik they are, you have a hard time talking to them in peace. And Yosef has a dream. Chazal say our dreams stem from our inner thoughts. Yosef has a prophetic dream, and he feels he must share it with them because it's prophetic. And he's right. It is prophetic. And he tells them the dream, and the dream comes true. He will have food for all of them, and they will bow down to him. It will come true. But they get upset. They say, you think you're taking control over all of us. Well, it was true. He was taking control over all of them. Yaakov kept appointing him in charge. Yaakov would send them to check how they were doing. So they hated him even more. So he has another dream. And again he tells them, I had a dream. The sun, the moon, the 11 stars are bowing to me. Now it's very clear. It's not his bundle. It's him. So his father hears the dream. And his father says, that's phenomenal. Because in Kabbalistic terms, Yaakov is called the sun. Just like Esav is called the sun, Yaakov is called the sun. Vayizrachlo HaShemesh. So Yaakov inwardly thinks, how did he know I'm called the sun in his dream? And here we see how successful the integration of Bilhah into the family was, because Yosef dreams of her as the moon, the mother that's going to come and bow to him. And his father yells at him and he says, why are you having such dreams? You really think your mother and I and your brothers are going to bow to you all the way to the floor? And his father really knows there's truth to the dream. And the brothers are just jealous. His father's yelling didn't work. And so the brothers go out and they think to themselves that they're going to go have a vacation. So they go to Shechem. And the mock reason is, because they're going to graze the sheep. The real reason is they want to enjoy themselves. And Yaakov says, Shechem's a dangerous place. Yosef, I want you to go check that everything's right. Yosef is leaving, and Yaakov accompanies him. And as Yaakov walks him, Yosef says, why do you have to walk me, Dad? He says, no, I'm walking you from the mountain to the valley. Why, says Yosef. And his father says, and these are the parting words that Yaakov tells Yosef, he says, the Jewish people will get a Torah. And in that Torah there will be a mitzvah of Egla Arufa. And the mitzvah of Egla Arufa is what happens when a person is found murdered. Think of the last mitzvah Yosef hears from his father before his brothers try to kill him. His father's parting words are, there will be a mitzvah in the Torah where if a person is found murdered and no one knows who murdered him, And the Torah says the elders of the city have to come out, and you bring in elders from the high court, and you take a calf, and you hack its head off, and you say, we did not spill this person's blood. And you make a declaration, we didn't let this person leave our town into unsafe territory without accompanying him. You see, the Torah wants that we accompany a person. They should never feel alone on their journey. So I'm accompanying you, that's a mitzvah in the Torah. And Yosef will never forget that lesson. We can understand why. You know, his father told him about a man found murdered, right? The mitzvah of Egla Ruva. So when the brothers pounce him and they're ready to kill him, Yosef asks himself, was dad hinting something to me? And so according to one opinion among the commentaries, Yosef, until he meets up with the brothers again, doesn't know if his father was in on the plan to kill him. And that's why Yosef never sends word back home, because he's not sure. What happened here? So Yosef heads out, and Hashem sends the Malach Gabriel to guide him. This story is supposed to play itself out. The story could have ended simply, Yosef shows up, and he comes back, and he says, Dad, I went to Shechem, they're nowhere to be found, and Shechem is a destroyed city now. I have no idea what happened, and that's what was about to happen. And then Yosef would go back home, and they would not live happily ever after. Chazal say, if that would have happened, if Yosef would not have gone to meet with the brothers, the next thing that would have happened would have been that a group of pirates would have come to Yaakov's house, and they would have captured Yaakov's family and put them all in shackles and taken them down to Egypt, and they'd all be enslaved, and the 400 years of slavery would have begun. By causing the story to play itself out this way, so Yosef will be enslaved in Egypt. He's fulfilling the prophecy. The Jewish people would be enslaved. Yosef thought, and the brothers thought, that Yosef would get the title Israel to his benefit. Right? He's the continuation. What does Hashem do? Turns the tables. Yosef's fulfilling the curse, the promise. Yosef's going to be enslaved in Egypt. Yaakov back home, he's also fulfilling it. He's going to be in shatters. He's going to be ruined, thinking that Yosef's dead. So Gabriel comes for the benefit of the family, and he tells Yosef, your brothers are gone. Brothers? No, you don't have brothers. They've gone out to figure out religious reasons to turn against you. And Yosef continues undeterred. And the brothers see him, and they start thinking, how should we bump him off? So first they sick the dogs at him, Shimon and Levi. That doesn't work. And then they pull the bow and they say, let's shoot him. And Yehuda Reuven says, don't kill him. Throw him into a pit here. Let him die a natural death. And Reuven's thoughts are, I will save him. So Yosef shows up, and they take off his clothing. And now Yosef is naked, and they throw him into the pit. And the halacha says after a court executes a person, they're not allowed to eat till sundown. So the brothers hear him wailing. They say, he's not dead yet. Let's go have a meal. They go and sit down to eat. And they look up and they see a caravan of Yishmaelim coming from Gilad. Gilad is a territory where historically the Jewish people would always have murderers. Gilad is a place that needs its own cities of refuge, because there were murderers in Gilad on the eastern side of the Jordan. And their camels have all kinds of perfumes and spices. And Yehuda tells the brothers, we don't make any profit off it this way. Yehuda thinks, let me save Yosef. He says, let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. So we will go with one interpretation, and then a second, and then a third. So the first interpretation is that these Yishmaelim come, they pull Yosef out of the pit. The Yishmaelim say, he's not worth that much. Look at him. Yosef is naked. He's pale as anything. He's just been sitting with snakes and scorpions for the last half hour. He's shivering. He's scared out of his wits. So they could only get 20 coins for him, because he doesn't look so valuable. The brothers say, come on, he's a good-looking young man. No. When he's being sold to Egypt, it's obvious that he might be bought for forced prostitution, and the idea is that men would be sleeping with him. The brothers say, let's see his dreams get fulfilled now. And they're selling him down to Egypt. That's interpretation number one. Interpretation number two, the Torah says Midianite merchants came and pulled Yosef out of the pit and sold Yosef to the Yishmaelim. It's not clear that the brothers ever found Yosef again, because the pasuk describes it as the Midianites sold him to the Yishmaelim. So one interpretation says that Yosef was in the pit wailing and Midianites merchants went by. The brothers were thinking, let's sell him. But by the time they came to the pit, the Midianites merchants had taken him out of the pit and sold him to the Yishmaelim. And the Yishmaelim took him down to Egypt. And the brothers come back to the pit and Yosef's gone. There are other interpretations to the story, whether the brothers sold him to the Midianites who sold him to the Yishmaelites. At the end of the day, Yosef is sold into Egypt. Reuven comes back. He's been hiding. He's been doing tshuva. And now he comes back to save the guy who got him in trouble. And here we see the piety of Reuven. Very often when someone gets a person into trouble, so the person who got into trouble is very upset at the guy who got him in trouble. Why'd you have to squeal on me? But Reuven is a person of truth. Reuven knows that it's not Yosef's fault he got into trouble. Reuven knows that what he did was wrong. Yosef was the vehicle of revealing what happened. But technically what Reuven did was wrong. And because Reuven's tshuva is real, so Reuven doesn't have an issue with Yosef. On the contrary, he's ready to save Yosef. Chazal say, had Reuven known what the Torah would write about him, he would have taken Yosef and put him on his shoulders and given him a piggyback ride all the way home. Had Reuven envisioned that the Torah will describe what happened here, Reuven would have taken Yosef personally against all the brothers and saved his life. Why do Chazal have to reveal that to us? Chazal are telling us the strength we have to do a mitzvah when we can envision getting credit for it. Sometimes we think, if I'm really pious, I won't get credit. Well, sometimes getting credit is an excellent drive to do things well. Sometimes it's good to get credit. I'll take a small example. You show up to shul early. You show up to shul and you're learning. So if someone walks in and sees you there, you feel great. Finally, someone knows I'm a tzaddik. That's okay. It's an okay drive.
Right, as long as it makes you do it.
If it helps us do what's right, that's wonderful. You know, if that's what'll help me do what's right, we all know it's not real. But it does give us the drive. It's important. And like you said, if I can get to do what's right. Now the flip side is that if we can complement what's right in our kids, we're helping them have the drive to do what's right. It's a week ago it was raining. My daughter got up, noticed that it started drizzling, ran outside, took all the laundry off the line so that the laundry my wife had hung out the night before wouldn't get wet. Now that it's starting to rain. In my mind, I've been waiting for the opportunity to compliment her for doing it. I wanted to do it on the spot, and I saw she's in a rush. She doesn't have a head to hear me. So it's waiting. I'm waiting for the opportunity to compliment her, because when you compliment, when you show appreciation to someone for doing something right, you're giving them the strength and the impetus to do it again. So, Yosef, Reuven says, I'm going to come back home, and Yosef's gone, and I'm going to be blamed. How am I going to face Dad after this? He's going to say, I did it, because I'm the one who lost the most by Yosef. So Chazal say that's not what Reuven said. When we read the text, that's what the text seems to say. That Reuven was saying, I'm going to be blamed. How can I face up Dad? Chazal say Reuven said something much more pure. Reuven said, how will I ever live with myself watching Dad suffer? Reuven wasn't worried about the blame. Reuven was worried about how can we watch our father suffer? Sometimes children fight. Sometimes the fight seems legitimate. It can be over a Yerusha. Why is he getting that inheritance? He inherited the apartment. He inherited the gold coins. He inherited, and you feel like you have a valid claim. Ask yourself the question, do I have a right to pain my parents that way? Reuven is not concerned with the blame. Chazal say Reuven was concerned, how can I cause our father that pain? We have to think about that point. So the brothers have a plan. They take the garment, they dip it in goat's blood, and they send it to their father, and they say, look what we found. Can you please recognize it? So Yaakov recognizes it. So Chazal say, Avera goreret Avera. When we do one thing wrong, that very easily brings us to do the next thing wrong. When a person does something wrong, so he wants to cover it up, so he's going to lie. And then he has to cover up that lie, so he's going to say another lie. And then he has to cover that up, so he's going to do something else that's inappropriate. And if finally he's caught, he's going to get upset to show how right he thinks he is. We can go down a path that way. And if we see the path unfolding before us, so then sometimes we can nip it at the bud and stop. The person sees he's coming home late, and he should have been coming home early. And he promised he'd be home early. It is very tempting to give excuses that are fallacious as to why we are coming home late. It's much better, most of the time, to be truthful. To say, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. You've stopped it. You've stopped it with one wrong. Very often, we let it pile up. So then suddenly you say one thing and the next thing, etc. And so now the brothers come and say, they didn't say what happened. They didn't say anything. They didn't say a lie. They just said, this is what we found. Can you please recognize it? But now they're going to have to live with 20 years of their father's suffering. 20 years Yaakov will not have Ruach HaKodesh. 20 years Yaakov will be in serious mourning. Chazal say there's a gift Hashem created in the world, and that is the gift of forgetting. When a person dies, Hashem made it that we forget. And that's why in the laws of mourning, the first 3 days are for crying, and after that is for mourning, and then after 30 days, man has to go back to life. But that's only if the person's really dead. If the person isn't dead, so then you don't have that gift from heaven. And that's why Yaakov could never forget Yosef. Yosef wasn't dead. And so Yaakov tears his clothing, and what no one else could do to him, the story of the war, Esav, Lavan, getting the wrong wife, having his daughter abducted, having his two sons kill out a city. His two sons then answer him. They're not willing to hear what he's teaching them. Reuven interferes with how he should set up the family. His wife Rachel dies. Everything he's undergone, he could stand up to. But this, the idea that there's hatred between his children, and he suspects his 10 children caused the murder of his one son, that he can't handle. And so he's devastated. No one else was able to bring him to his knees. Lashon hara and baseless hatred brought him down. And so everyone tries to comfort him, but they're not successful. And so they turn on Yehuda. And they say, it's your fault. You're the leader. And here we have to see the two sides of leadership. On the one hand, leadership is phenomenal. You get credit. If the organization does great, if your shul does great, and you were the president, and you led them to more Torah and growth, no, kol hakavod. That's why every one of you should have front row seats in your shuls. I expect to visit you, and I don't want to see you sitting in the back. If you're not the rabbi, you should be the president. If you're not the president, you should be the chief gabbai. You guys all, if you made it to Machon Meir, that means you have the soul of a leader. Because everyone that got here had to fight the tide. All your friends didn't get here. I've rarely seen two guys from the same county come to Machon Meir. If a person made it to Machon Meir, it means he has what it takes. So leadership is phenomenal, because you can really take credit and bring people and families and change their lives. But leadership is a double-edged sword. And so when Yehuda errs, all the brothers turn on him and they say, it's all your fault. Wait a second, guys. Any one of you could have said no. What does that mean, it's all your fault? The answer is, when you're the leader, the buck stops there. It is your fault. And so the brothers feel very comfortable blaming Yehuda, even though they all had a hand in it. And Yehuda is comfortable taking the responsibility. It is his fault. And so Yehuda demotes himself. And Yehuda starts developing his personal life. He goes into business. He has three children. And then he loses, as we described, his two eldest children without having grandchildren. A tragedy. Yehuda buries his two eldest children and they leave nothing. Now, Yehuda has to contend with the thought, what did I do to Yosef? What did I do to my father? Yehuda has to see every day how his father is suffering, and his father thinks that Yosef died without children. So Yosef is really alive, but Yehuda's children are really dead. Chazal are showing us the price Yehuda pays. So he's the leader. He has responsibility. And Yehuda moves forward. And then Yehuda loses his wife. And so Chazal show us how Yehuda is yet to do tshuva. Years will pass. Yehuda will pay a price again and again. And it will only be down the road that Yosef will show Yehuda how to do tshuva. But at this point, Yehuda holds on. And this is what also reveals to us that the brothers held they were right. That means there was validity in their claim. Yehuda was a tzaddik, beyond what we perceive. And if Yehuda, after all this happens, doesn't run down to Egypt looking for Yosef, then that means that everything Yehuda saw led him to rethink what happened and say, but we were right. I'm sorry Dad feels this way, but we were right. And Chazal tell us that after the brothers sold Yosef, they made a pact that no one should reveal what had happened. And Hashem joined their pact. And that's another indication that there was validity in their claim. Yosef was giving them the sense that they were threatened. Threatened to the point of losing their right to be a part of the Jewish people. And they said, if it's us or you, then you're going to go, not us. We are not in the wrong. And as the brothers revisited the question again and again, they said, we feel terrible over our father's suffering, but we were right to sell Yosef down. In next week's parsha, we will have to analyze, what do the brothers say after 20 years have passed? But so far, no one's having second thoughts in the sense, let's go back and bring Yosef. They see their father suffering and they say, what choice did we have? So Yehuda buries one son, he buries a second son, he buries his wife, and now he goes to shear his sheep. And Chazal tell us what's about to happen is not the way we would think. So let's begin with a basic understanding. Truth is, a basic understanding is Chazal. So Tamar gets dressed up. And Yehuda has just buried his wife and two children. And he's traveling. And as he's traveling, this young lady beckons him. And she's all covered up. So the Rambam begins the laws of marriage, describing how in ancient times, before the Torah was given, people would meet up on a street and decide if they want to get together or not. The Rambam begins the laws of marriage, saying before the Torah was given, this is how people could lead their lives. We're not told how Avram met Sarah. Rabbi Herschel Schachter often says, perhaps Avram and Sarah met at a New Year's Eve party. We don't know. Doesn't say. So Yehuda meets up with Tamar. If we again remember that in those days there wasn't yet a Torah, so Yehuda, who is lonely, asks her if she's interested. Tamar says, I'm very interested. Yehuda says, I'm a descendant of Avram, and we don't do things unless the woman's pure. She says, I'm pure. He says, What does that mean? She says, my cycle was a long time ago, and I've been pure, and I went to mikvah. He says, oh, so you know about that? She says, yes. He says, can it be that your father engaged you to someone else? Are you free to marry? And she says, my father died. Her father, Shem, had already died. She says, I am free to marry. Yehuda sees that she speaks his language, and he doesn't recognize her. Why doesn't he recognize her? So if we read the pasuk without a tradition, then the answer is because she was all dressed up. And in ancient times, when women would try to seduce men, they'd get all dressed up because they were looking to make money, and they'd seduce any man they can get, and sometimes it would be their brother, and sometimes it would be their neighbor, and it was much more comfortable for the man and the woman not to know who she was, so she'd be all covered up. But Chazal say that's not what happened here. Chazal say the reason he didn't recognize her was because she was so modest whenever she'd come to his house, that now when he's actually talking to her, he doesn't recognize her. He doesn't know who she is. So Yehuda doesn't recognize her because of her modesty all the years she was married to his kids. Chazal say we learn from this how modest the daughter-in-law should be in her father-in-law's house. Your family, you're there, you retain a certain level of modesty. So she tells him, but if we're going to do this, you have to give me a collateral. So she says, I want your signet ring. I want your signet ring. I want your cape. And I want your staff. And Yehuda had a very special staff. He had a very special signet ring that had the shape of a lion on it. And and his cape was a special cape. It had tzitzis on it. And his staff was a special staff. And he gives them to her as a guarantee that he will send what he promised. So when it's all over, Yehuda goes his way and sends his non-Jewish friend to bring the goat. Seems like his non-Jewish friend didn't have any problem going looking for a woman of ill repute. That wasn't an embarrassment to him. And obviously he can't find her. And then Yehuda says, I can't make this known. People will hear what happened. They're going to look down at me. So Yehuda had promised her he'd send her a goat. And Chazal say he tricked his father with a goat. That's why she tricked him with a goat. And after 3 months, he hears that Tamar is pregnant. So in those days, the rule of the land was that if a woman is supposed to be waiting for her brother-in-law for Yibum, and she cheats on him, so then she gets a death penalty by burning, something that's not true in Torah. But that was the law of the land back then. So she's supposed to get the death penalty of being burned. Another opinion says that they'd have a brand, just like you brand animals. If a woman was a woman of ill repute, so they'd brand her on her forehead, a sign that she was a woman of ill repute. That was the law of the land at the time. So then, according to that interpretation, she wasn't really going to die. So here we have a bunch of midrashim. We're short on time. The Medrash says, she sends word to her father-in-law and says, I'm pregnant for the guy who owns these. Do you know who he is? And she sends him his ring and his staff and his cape, his tzitzis. And Yehuda says, she's right, I'm the one who did it. And Yehuda admits, he wanted to keep it hidden. He admits. Remember we said in the beginning that there are going to be a lot of parts to this story where people plan one way and Hashem shows them how his plan is what's going to win. So Yehuda planned to hide it, and now Yehuda has to admit publicly, I did it. Chazal say until this moment, No one knew what Reuven did wrong. All of Reuven's tshuva was in private. When Yehuda had the courage to stand up and say, it's me, I'm wrong. So Reuven also stood up and said, Dad, don't suspect my brothers. I'm the one who did it with Bilam.
Is that also an example of leadership?
Yes. The leader, David's strength is that when he falls, he can say, I'm wrong. Shaul tries to argue, you know, I'm right in this, I'm right in that way. Yehuda right away says, I'm wrong. And that's the greatness of a leader. And that's the greatness of David also. And so Yehuda could be silent because she's about to be executed. And if he's silent, no one will know. She'll die. So Yehuda speaks up. If Yehuda didn't speak up to save Yosef's life, now Yehuda does speak up to save Tamar's life. And not only her life, but the life of the two children she's carrying. And because of that, we have the Davidic dynasty. Yehuda sees it as he's doing her a favor. He's being so pious. He's admitting what he did wrong at the expense of his own honor. Chazal tell us, Yehuda saved the world. When Yehuda admitted it, he did himself the greatest favor. All of Yehuda's dynasty will still come from these two children. David HaMelech, Mashiach, everything comes from here. Sometimes in life, when we feel cornered, am I going to do what's right or wrong, we feel like we're doing God a favor. And the Torah repeatedly shows us how we're doing ourselves the biggest favor. Yes, sir. It's a Gemara in Sota.
The question is why the Gemara there would phrase in such a way. Why would Reuven himself had understood that the Torah words that he's laying such a Bila as a way of overstating the
correct
historical reality. But
so Reuven said, Bilbalti Yitzuei Avi. That's the wording of the Gemara. Reuven said, I'm the one who moved around my father's beds. Bilbalti Yitzuei Avi. Yitzua like matzah, a bed. So now that it's become clear, so Yehuda marries her officially, and Chazal say that when she came to send Yehuda the staff and his tzitzis, his cape, and his ring, they disappeared. She couldn't find them. So she's about to be taken out to be executed, and she says, wait, I just want to send Yehuda a message, and the key components are gone. Chazal say Esav's angel came and took him away and hid him. It was unnatural that she shouldn't be able to find him in that moment. So Chazal say, Gavriel, our angel, came and brought him back. And that's why it says, he mutzait. She was found. She was finding. She couldn't find it. And then she did. So Chazal say, Yehuda said, Tzedakah, she is right. And a heavenly voice said, Mimeni, this is all my planning. That Hashem said, I wanted this to play itself out that way. So Chazal tell us, you guys heard, you know, in cartoons, they have this angel called Cupid.
Yeah.
Yes? So the source for that angel is in the Medrash on this week's Parsha. The Medrash says that Hashem sent an angel to hit Yehuda over the head and make him overtaken with desire for Tamar. That Yehuda's nature should not have played itself out the way it did here. But Hashem said, I want this to happen this way. And there's a famous chida, that the chida says that, so to speak, whenever good things, the greater things that come to the world, they have to come through the world from something that seems dark. And so Mashiach has to come through the world from Lot and his daughters, and Yehuda and Tamar. It's as though the only way it can happen is if it seems one way, when it actually plays itself out the other way. So she gives birth, and we're up to the story of Yosef. So Yosef is purchased by the chief executioner, a very tough guy. And he likes Yosef's looks. And so he takes Yosef home, and he's filled with lust over Yosef. And this is where we'll pick up, Ezrat Hashem, on Thursday night.